This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Why haven't you got your own YouTube channel?
I don't see the point in it. That's what you're for. That's why you need to make a living, don't you? I don't need to make a living.
Everyone's jumped on it over the years.
Do you know what, though? I don't need to make a living out of other people's jobs. If I can't make a living out of my own job, I don't need, certainly don't need to make a living out of somebody else's job.
Fair play.
Financial fair play.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of MyOldManSaid.com. Joining me to help me keep awake from my jet lag, Mr. Chris Bird and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello.
How are you, gentlemen?
I'm all right. Not too bad.
Yeah, good. Positive.
Funny you say that, Phil, because I had a viewer, I forgot if they sent me a email or a message, and they said, that guy you have on from Northern Ireland, can you tell him to get some happy pills?
It's just our general demeanour. That's us. our hospital waiting lists are so long that's just our happiness.
You told me you've taken action though. And did you buy a book at the airport or something you were talking about?
Yeah, it was the subtle art of not giving a fuck. Which whenever you read through it, you apply to Villa quite a lot when you realise that maybe you've been caring about things too much and not as he puts it, not placing your fucks in the right pile or the right place.
Like it.
Yeah, maybe we should have a segment. What's the book called again?
The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Right. Yeah, maybe we will. We'll work on that.
There's definitely a segment to be had from that.
Oh, there's definitely a segment. Yeah. Maybe we'll do one in this show. Maybe we'll identify what one thing that we shouldn't give a fuck about.
Yeah.
There's a long list.
Well, maybe three things then, but meditate on that. We'll bring that up when we are talking about the Spurs game, because there's something that it's going to be hard not to give fucks about. How are you, Mr. Bird? What's been going on in your universe? You've come back from a meeting with the great overlord, Mr. Christian Purslow, have you not?
I have this evening, yeah. Insightful as always. Clearly very much in charge, shall we say, as you've said before. Very much he is the boss and likes everyone to know that.
Was he looking at his watch and shutting people down?
Subtly this time, not so obviously as usual, but subtly.
Well, we'll get some of his input.
He was there for an hour's questioning and not a minute more.
All right, well, that's pretty good for him, an hour. I thought it'd be a half an hour job.
Nah.
that he normally affords the trust. Right, anyway, let's kick on with the show. In this show, we will be, Chris will tell us exactly what happened in the Villa week, in a Villa minute. We'll look at 3 points, which include our Carabao Cup co-finalists getting into a spot of bother. We'll also obviously look at the Spurs game and maybe give a couple of indications of what we don't give a fuck about before breaking down how we're feeling about the season ahead, as we all always do at the end. Before we have a breakdown. And also, I'm going to fire out the cushion competition, which I promised in a podcast. I forgot about it in the last one, that I said I would offer up if Villa beat Leicester in the semi-final. And by the way, this cushion is probably the best thing ever that's connected.
I mean, this is the cushionist cushion that ever cushioned.
Something like that.
This is like Champions League level cushioning.
Oh, it is for sure. It has a velvet feel, soft to the touch. It's fantastic. This show is not a show about soft furnishing, so we better crack.
Whoa! Am I in the wrong place?
I think you've walked into the wrong studio.
Is this not the IKEA podcast?
This is. I mean, it's a virtual studio. But,
this is the Leave It to Lee Longlands.
Anyway, Phil, can you kick this guy out of the virtual studio, please? Right, what comes up first? Is it the Villa newscap or the Villa week in a Villa minute?
Newscap.
Right. So what's new in the Villa universe since last we spoke? Well, I managed out of thin air to... We did a competition for one pair of tickets. We've been doing Carabao Cup ticket competitions since the Wolves game. Carabao, through their agency, has been very generous. And out of the blue, after I thought that was it, the final pair for the final. And then out of nowhere, they said, how would you like to get involved with giving 20 pairs out? So that's 20 pairs of tickets that will go directly through Moms to Villa fans and not to corporates and sponsors and that kind of malarkey. So you would have probably heard by this time whether you've won. It was a poem competition. Actually, Phil Shaw's poem was exceptional.
Just inspiration.
Can you remember it off the top of your head?
Phil, you should read this.
You should read it.
It's not off the top of my head, but I'll find it. Here we go. Right.
Oh.
Ready?
Oh, here we go. Silence, please. Silence.
Best Shakespearean. Villa were claret, City were blue. Villa have history, City want one too. Villa care about winning, City are blasé. Only one of us have got done by financial fair play.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, like it.
It's beautiful. Well, maybe you've won by the time this is out. Although it says UK, hopefully they mean UK Northern Ireland, because sometimes people are funny about that, aren't they?
Well, wouldn't know what you're talking about over here.
In other news this week, Villa Park, the temple of football, has been elected to host the upcoming England game in June against Romania. Will you be going, Mr. Bird?
I will.
I've seen Romania play, but it was against France, so maybe I should pop along. It would be a novelty of watching England from the whole 10, for example.
I did that before, actually. I saw Hugo Ekiog score in front of the whole 10 for England. That was quite cool.
Yes, yeah.
It was Sven's first game against Spain. Try getting an England team to thump Spain 3-0 this day and age. David James was in goal.
Ooh. In more sour international Villa news, I saw, Chris, actually, I was waking up from my jet lag. I've just been to LA, and while I was there on a holiday, I actually recorded a couple of podcasts, actually, with Bob and Danny out there, two villains in LA. So look out for them. I think I'll put a longer versions out as Mom's Patreon extra podcast, but I'll get them up in the next few days. Both excellent hospitality, massive fans of the show as well, and all round good guys. But anyway, when I was just speaking to Chris earlier today, he told me about the Ghanaian Lions that receiving like racist DMs, pretty much saying they shouldn't be following the team. Am I paraphrasing? Have you actually seen these?
Yeah. I haven't seen the messages themselves. I've sort of said to them to screenshot them and put them out there.
Yeah, I've sent them a private message telling them exactly what to do.
Yeah.
But he's been, you know, saying that people have been telling him to shut down his account and they shouldn't be following Villa because of where they are and the colour of their skin, which is, you know, once upon a time, as older villains will know, Villa used to sing from the terraces, "Villa are white," as Everton used to do. And, you know, those days are a long, long time ago. And it's just ridiculous that some, you know, group of villains that have actually brought such a positive light, albeit at this moment only on social media, but their videos, are excellent.
Brilliant.
Really mm-hmm. good in terms of the obsession that seems to exist before, well, in the running up to the game, where they actually have a kind of parade and march before the game.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Is, something that's match going
missing
fans
at Villa Park.
Yeah, so it's an embarrassment, and there's fucking idiots out there who think that trolling them on Twitter is a good thing to do.
Yeah, it's something that Christian Perslow actually mentioned this evening in terms of, and this is, you know, behaviour in the stadium as well. He's got a very hard line zero tolerance on racism and all that behaviour.
Yeah, he's got a hard line zero tolerance on pretty much any misbehaviour in the stadium.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
As he said to me in the fan consultation group meeting, that, you know, he admits that they actually side on the side of harshness when it comes to this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Going to Wembley, tickets left for Wembley. By the time this podcast comes out, I'd imagine it would be sold out, would it not?
Yeah, I would imagine it'll get to 5 just about. So I'd imagine they'll have spaced it out in such a way. But luckily I got mine last week.
One of the best chances of, if you've entered the... it's almost like the Wembley ticket ballot, the mom's competition, then good luck, and hopefully you'd have got a ticket through.
Or just get one in the Man City end, as they don't seem to be very bothered.
Yeah, there's that option. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
That's gone to general sale.
Yeah, and season ticket holders can buy 2 additional tickets as well.
Basically, if you ever set foot in Manchester or know one of the words to Blue Moon, they'll give you a ticket.
Or if you ever brought an Oasis song, you probably allowed a ticket as well. Whatever news, owners issue another 17 million shares. Where did that come from?
That came from Company's House, David.
Well, it was the first I've heard. So
okay, yeah, that was earlier in the week. Was it the end of last week? They obviously pumped in another injection of shares. So that's good to know they're still engaged.
Where did it come from? Where did it go? We'll find out one day.
Indeed.
Because I haven't been up to speed, I was just wondering if you knew if what it was for, you know.
I know there's been another
between
load
the lines,
of,
so to speak.
Yeah, I think there's been another load of capital investment in terms of the Bodymore Heath redevelopment. I know they are obviously expanding the training facilities. They're building like a high-class performance centre, aren't they?
Yeah, to
go on top of the already new facilities with a new little mini stadium and stuff like that.
Yeah, because when they first came to town, the first thing they did was push a chunk of cash the academy's way.
That seems to be a huge priority. They've said that is the integral part of the long-term vision for the club is the academy and making sure that the academy fires properly, which they openly acknowledge hasn't happened in recent past.
I'm sure we've spoken about this previously. There's no real point to an academy if all you're doing is churning out players to play in... to send up the Irish League or Scottish Ooh. League. No disrespect. Of course, it was massive disrespect there, but...
no, because if you've ever seen the Irish League, it's fine.
Yeah.
And also the two lower tiers in and non-league in the English League, because if you follow the careers of most of the players that have left the academy in the last, let's say, 10 years, there's not many, pulling up trees in the top tiers.
Bar Mark Albright in recent years, nothing.
Yeah, Grealish, and that's about it. So you wonder, what is the purpose? I mean, what did... Because Perslow mentioned something about that, didn't he? About your Callum O'Hares, etc.
Yeah, so essentially the sort of the stance I think they'll take moving forward is that you can't be having sort of 22-year-olds playing in the under-23s. You know, if they haven't made the grade by a determined age bracket.
Yeah, like 20-ish, I would say.
Yeah, and which I think is true, to be fair. You know, some players develop later, but you can bring them in from elsewhere, I think. But in terms of your academy working as an entity, you want that to be the best sort of 16 to 18, 19-year-olds. But at that point, they need to break into the first team. So if they get into that age, then you've got to loan them out. Callum O'Hare, I believe, is 21, 22 maybe now, apparently. Yeah. So he's quite late in his development. And you've got people like Keenan Davis playing in the reserves. You know, you can't have these guys, albeit have... juniors propped up by a senior player who needs a bit of game time perhaps, but generally I think they know that they've had to overhaul the way that, you know, the internal structure of the academy and how they bring players through. I know the Louis Barry signing was a huge statement. He's widely regarded as one of the top prospects in the whole of Europe as a young player. We know when the opportunities came to get him, I think they said, well, we have to go and get him to be able to justify to sort of, you know, young, very young players and their families, okay, that's the place for us to go, which they've fallen behind when in reality...
the competition is rife.
Yeah, and Villa should be dominant in the middle of England. Purslow basically said anything north of Watford, south of Manchester, Villa should wipe the floor there.
Yeah. I mean, you only have to look back to not that long ago when we actually won the equivalent of the Champions League when it was labelled the next gen.
Yep.
And we were there all skipping, thinking, oh, the future's bright. And nothing happened. You know, Grealish was kind of in and out of that team because he was pretty young at that time.
Yeah.
But everybody else is playing in the Irish League.
I mean, ultimately, you know, you don't, as much as it's nice to win things. I mean, I went to see the 23s when they won the, I think it was the Premier League Cup a couple of seasons ago at Leicester, but winning trophies at that level doesn't mean fuck all, because you ultimately judge your academy by, well, how many people graduate into the first team?
Yeah, but if you're winning European competitions, you think, well, we've missed at least two or three that are going to make the grade. The upshot is, if you're good enough, you're old enough. I mean, you only have to look at somebody we mentioned on the 3 points, a year or so ago, Erling Haaland, who scored 2 goals today for Dortmund, and I think he's on 39 goals. He scored 6 hat-tricks, 11 goals in 7 league games, I think.
Well, he's gone to Dortmund and he's seriously hit the ground running, hasn't he?
Yeah, and then you're scoring goals for fun at, was it Salzburg, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He scored 12 goals in 7 games in the Champions League. I mean, I think he was the first teenager to score in 5 consecutive Champions League games, and he's only 19. So, you know, there's the benchmark.
He's got attitude as well.
Yeah, he looks a cracking player.
He's like a young, I don't know, he's like Costa. He's just got that no respect for the opposition at all. Just get it, smash it in, next.
Yeah, it's great.
He's a beast, yeah.
Yeah, and you look at like Jadon Sancho, the same. You know, he's pulling up trees over there. You know, young English player, wasn't going to get the opportunities he felt he deserved in England, went over there and he's killed it. Yeah. And now ultimately he will come back to England, I'm sure, in the summer. But his transfer value now for an English club to buy him back, it's going to be astronomical.
Right, Chris, carry on talking. It's a Villa week and a Villa minute.
Villa returned from their mid-season break to entertain Champions League finalist Spurs. Horrific weather in the form of Storm Dennis shut Winter Station and flood disruption around Villa Park, but the game went ahead. Mings was out with man flu and tonsillitis. Drinkwater returned to the starting lineup. Villa started brightly and got a well-deserved break when Alderweireld put through his own net after great work from El Ghazi. Luiz misses a gilt-edged chance for 2-0 as Villa squander 2 great chances. A lucky break gives Spurs a goal from a corner, superbly taken by Alderweireld. VAR takes centre stage as Engels gives away a penalty, which is saved by Reina. Son reacts to the penalty and prods home for 2-1. Engels redeems himself, heading home a Grealish corner. Spurs put on the pressure and Reina is forced into a string of saves. Son misses 2 huge chances, but a long punt up the field with the last kick of the game is missed by Engels. Son runs on, races clear and finishes to win the game 3-2, which is a cruel end to the game for Villa in a game that they deserve to get a draw from. Another opportunity missed. Next stop, Southampton.
Anything else to add? We're getting relegated.
Good.
Right, before we talk about that game in full, let's have a quick 3 points. Let's step quickly out of the Villaverse. Point number one, our esteemed Carabao Cup final opponents, Manchester City, have been hit by what seems to be a pretty fierce statement of intent ban from UEFA. They will not be playing in the Champions League for the next 2 seasons. At this point, before appeal. And they've also been hit by a $30 million fine as well. How do you view that, Phil? Do you think that's harsh, or do you think it's... I mean, they've been doing all kinds of cooking the books. I mean, they've been using microwaves, heat-intensive furnace, nuclear power stations to cook those books.
The thing about it is, the bit about it that gets me is the sponsorship by Etihad. So,
oh, yeah.
It's like, I mean, we can probably talk about Villa selling the stadium to themselves, you know, all day long. It's not great, but it happened.
So listeners understand, Villa sold the stadium back to them at, let's say, a fair reflection on the value. Yeah. I think it was like 59 million, like Derby, for example. They valued their stadium, correct me if I'm wrong, at like 80 million.
Yeah, so Sheffield Wednesday as well.
Yeah, so in terms of the stadium buybacks, it's the actual value you value it at, because that's where you'd start creative accounting when you overvalue it. But anyway, sorry, carry on.
I mean, who puts the checks on Etihad? I mean, it's like, right, I own Etihad. I want to sponsor my own team that I also own. Oh, a fair price for that will be 200 million a season. Yeah. I mean, that's where it comes down to. That's what...
Exactly.
I mean,
it's overvaluation again.
Yeah, I know a City fan, and like I went to school with him. He's been a City fan for years, even when they were right down as low as they could go. And yeah, like, he's just going to take it in the chin. He's just going to say, well, if we knew we were doing it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So and they were putting money through Etisalat as well, weren't they? And all these companies that are all under the sovereign wealth banner of the Sheikh. And I know there were a lot of sort of dodgy emails that did the rounds. There was obviously the Der Spiegel article that came out.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Which was fascinating read. And there's been stuff that followed on since that came out on the day. So it will be really interesting to see, you know, where UEFA end up sitting on the scale of sort of the sanctions. You know, Christian Perslow had mentioned there's about 15 levels of sanctions that can be sort of put against City, you know, on a sort of like a sliding scale, and UEFA have gone right in at the highest and most unprecedented level. So whether they're really trying to make an example of City, or whether there's other clubs in Europe trying to like keep the status quo, your Juventuses, Barca's, Real's, United, etc., this world going, nah, fuck you, Man City, trying to buy your way into the club, which unfortunately is realistically the only way you can do it now. It will be interesting to see. I happen to think that I think they will still get sanctioned, but it will get reduced. And it will probably take ages for this stuff to come through now. They'll just wrap it up in so much legal work. Yeah. It will take years to finalise.
I mean, of course, they've got the money to fund, let's say, a pretty decent appeal. So it probably will drag on a bit. And hopefully we'll beat them in the final just to... I'm sure there'll be some songs aimed at this ban if we do beat them. Point number two, who ate all the pies indeed? Premier League refs Andy Maidley and David Coote failed their fitness test to become members of the UEFA elite list of refs. Chris, you know a little bit more about this, don't you?
Yeah, they were meant to go to the training camp in Mallorca. It's for the like the referees chief, you know, obviously Mike Riley will put forward, you know, his recommendations for sort of the elite list. You know, obviously every country in Europe puts forward their top refs, and the obviously the guys who Mike Riley put forward weren't up to scratch,
which is no surprise from any
considering Mike Riley's shit at the best of times. So
yeah, and it was no surprise from any fan that follows the English Premier League or Championship and below about the standard of the refs. I mean, VAR obviously gets a hammering, and I've always said there's a place for VAR because the human element does fuck up the game, and you know, VAR is just a computer system that humans use, and it's not physical tests that these referees need; it's mental tests, because you know the main problem is a referee's fucking mental state, and especially those guys that sit in the booth. I mean, we're going to talk about the Spurs game, but you know, the Chelsea game. I thought it was quite funny when Chelsea got those two goals chalked off by VAR, and I think that it's understandable. I mean, the main complaint is consistency, and that's where the human error and the protocol of how VAR is used comes into play. But what you do see is VAR is frustrating crowds, and when you disallow two goals at somewhere like Stamford Bridge, it's not going to really create a decent atmosphere for officials, is it?
No, it certainly sort of seems that the technology is clearly here to stay, and I don't mind that. It's not the technology, it's the sort of interpretation of the rules, and I think there will definitely be changes.
Yeah,
an application, things like, you know, is there clear daylight, is there clear and obvious error? We've said it numerous times, but they really need to take a leaf out of rugby's book, because when it comes to the use of the video referee, rugby have just nailed it.
Yeah, Phil, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just wonder, I mean, I look at the Giroud goal that was ruled out, especially if you're a striker and you're playing on the shoulder of the defender. I mean, I can't see, somebody mentioned it, as a striker, do you now glance down at your own feet as well before you make that dart, before you make that run? I mean, is that what they're going to have to do? Because his shoulders were level, and it's only natural, right? I'm level with this guy, headed in, let's go. And all of a sudden, oh, your foot was across.
I mean, to be fair, on that one, when I looked at it straight away, I thought that's offside. side. So yeah, because it's a foot, and the foot, I mean, they talk about any part of the body that can be used to score, and a foot is, it's up there. It's number one on the list.
Yeah, I mean, on this season, on the decisions that have been given, I mean, the Wesley heel, the Wolves offside, you know, this week as well.
When it's armpits and hips and stuff, that's when it becomes a bit tenuous, I think.
Yeah, it's just not clear and obvious, is it? It's not, if there's not clear daylight, they're not offside.
Point number three, the coronavirus enters the world of football. Yes, Chris Budd has it. So if you're on the whole tent against Spurs, you need to get it checked out. You need to get yourself checked out.
We're locking it. We're going to lock everybody in the whole suite. We're all in the incubation period.
Sorry, I was only joking. No, seriously, it is entered the universe of football as Manchester United's new signing Odion Ighalo has been banned from the training ground after his arrival from China. Is that precautionary? I mean, I
believe so. Yeah, obviously he was on loan from Shanghai.
Is it racism or is it just precautionary?
No, I think what they did was they basically took the team away, didn't they, for warm weather training, and he was obviously just kept away for a little while.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of the players.
But it has definitely stepped up a notch. I mean, when I flew into LA a couple of weeks ago at customs, it was insane. Pretty much half the queue, and it was a big fucking queue. It took me about an hour to clear. Well, about a third of the people were wearing masks. Everybody working there was wearing masks. So you suddenly there's a film, Steven Soderbergh, called Contagion, where a virus takes over the world. There's lots of kind of famous actors in it. And you watch that film and you go, it's all right, whatever. But I keep thinking about that film now, obviously, from what's been happening in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I've been on tour in Asia before, sort of in like Hong Kong, Korea, places like that. And I had to go through like scanners and like, you know, getting the people literally scanning you like with a body scanner up and down to make sure that you weren't of a certain temperature or carrying fever and stuff. I think that was when it was the SARS outbreak a few years ago.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. Maybe we'll start to quarantine the away end when certain teams visit us. We shall see. Just want to quickly give a big shout out to the My Old Man patrons who have joined in the last few days. Justin Cook-Davis and Peter Bullivant, thank you very much for joining. You will be receiving the extra shows this week. Now I am back and the winter break is over. We will be up and running with extra content. I think first of all will be the LA interviews, which I'll put out in a longer form probably there before I edit them down for the main release. Please do go if you want to support the show and also get access to new shows. I think the cushion contest will be patrons only. So I will put up a Patreon post about the cushion competition. Just like it if you want to enter it, and you will be entered automatically, and I'll crack that draw out at the end of the week after this podcast surfaces. Please do go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon link and sign up there. Thank you very much.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right then, Spurs game.
Ouch.
Should they have called it off?
No.
I'm just trying to avert defeat, really. That's all I'm doing there.
Well,
you know, I think we said at the end of the last show, at the end of the winter break, the Spurs game would show our intent going into the rest of the season. I think all it did really was show us the full spectrum of what Villa are capable, from the good and the sublime to the utter self-destruction that we actually saw, especially the incident in injury time.
Yeah, it was basically a microcosm of the entire season so far.
Exactly, yeah. Tottenham's boss, Jose Mourinho, who used to find Villa Park a terrible place to come. It took him ages until he got his first win for Chelsea. That was one of the proud things of being a villain, despite Mourinho winning titles and cups. And us being crap most of the time, we managed to have his number up until the kind of final years of his time there at Chelsea. He said after the game, "I thought we deserved to win, but I think they did not deserve to lose. Villa play to win." It's a bit of a conundrum, that sentence, I think. But I think, I don't know if they deserve to win, although Pepe Reina, I thought, had a very solid game, made some great saves, and I definitely agree with him that we didn't deserve to lose.
Yeah, I thought that. I thought 2-2 was a fair result. I thought if you were a neutral, it was two teams who pretty much went at it. You know, Spurs clearly have end product, and we gifted them. You know, they got three, you know, relatively lucky crap goals. You know, we made our goal. I think we took our goals relatively well. Obviously, the own goal was well constructed. I think we earned the break. I think if Aldevaro hadn't put it in, I think Samatta would have probably buried it anyway.
Yeah.
It was just a really good game of football. It was one of those few times where actually you went in at half time and thought, how on earth are we losing this? Because we were played really, really well in the first half.
Phil, considering the book you're reading, how did you think the game played out?
We started properly. I mean, Smith said against Bournemouth, you know, the first 6 seconds, whatever, told them what the way the game was going to be. And in the first minute, the games, we started properly. We were aggressive. I mean, we've found out now that Cons has broke Son's arm in his first, you know, in the first couple of minutes. But it was, you know, it was a fair tackle. He just put him in the ground and, you know, we went out with a tenth intent. We weren't what we have been accused of being the whole season, which was passive. So we went out to make things happen.
And in reply, Son scored 2 goals.
Yeah, with a broken arm.
Horrible goals as well.
It's because Son's also been reading that not giving a fuck book as well. Oh, you broke my arm. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to score 2 goals.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, I mean, we just played proper football. I mean, I watched the game with my wife, and, you know, like, I mean, she's a long suffering Villa like me. I made her that way. And I mean, she, apart from every time Drinkwater gets the ball, she swears and makes horrible noises. She just says, you know, they're playing really well. They play really good football this season. And then she just, then obviously we let a goal in, and she just looks at me and says, why again? And I'm like, yeah,
why,
I know.
Phil, why?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, possession-wise, it was one of the rare games that we actually had more possession, 54% than the opposition. And shot-wise, that statistic shows you what a kind of open game it was. I mean, 18 shots to Spurs' 23. I mean, we only got 4 on target, and Reina dealt with at least half of the 10 that was on target from Spurs.
Well, Reina had a great game, didn't he?
Yeah, I think that justified him coming, actually. I mean, he's already shown that it was a smart move, but this actually showed he's not like the jaded, experienced head who might be good at organising the defence. He actually can stop as well.
No, you know, he was unlucky with the penalty. I think the first goal he's not at fault for. It's just flashed past him. The final goal he can't do anything about, but in terms of his distribution throughout the game was superb. And he made some important saves in the second half, you know, especially.
Phil, what do you think about this, the defence? I mean, when I saw the Mings wasn't playing, I thought, shit, of all the games, because I fancied we could get something off Spurs, so I must be honest.
I thought they were there for the taking.
Because Spurs' away record's pretty shonky this season, but when you see Mings out, Engels, and then the other two have been kind of hot and cold. I mean, what's your take on the defence, and start the conversation about Engels' performance?
Well, I mean, I just think there was a graphic put into the Facebook group about, you know, where do teams defend? I'm looking at it now because, like I said, commented beneath it, I'm a bit obsessed with it. It was Rich Foster put it into the Facebook group, and it just shows that Villa do most of their defending right in their penalty box. I think that's telling the story. I mean, compared to Liverpool, who are defending from the front, I just think Villa's defenders, I mean, Engels made that mistake at the end. I mean, I don't know what he was trying to do. I mean, you have to look at it. If he is successful and he traps that ball, why is he trapping it? Because then you're going to have Son breathing down his neck to take it off his feet. I mean, it just had to go.
With his broken arm.
Yeah. But no, I think the problem with the defence is they're getting tested far too much. I mean, it's law of average. It's like the Liverpool game. You said all those crosses diagonally into the box. The law of averages, eventually it's going to break. And it's the same with the defence. I mean, they'll deal with, you know, 7-8 balls into the box very well. And then it'll be the 9th and it'll be the 10th when something will happen. Because if it wasn't Engel's mistake that led to the winner for Spurs, it could have been Baston's when he came on. It could have been any number of them in the last, you know, 20 minutes. I mean, the campus block from Baston was brilliant. Or everyone from that mistake.
Do you think that it's a matter of Dean Smith is trying to ingrain the philosophy of playing it out the back? So that's the first thing that comes into a Villa defender's mind when a ball comes to him, because Engels volleys that away. Or if he just attacks it, he wins that ball and, you know, and it flies up the pitch. Okay, people may, you know, start saying, you know, he's lumping it or whatever, but in the time that he's doing it, it's in injury time, you know, who gives a fuck? But we've seen it time and time again, this kind of little split second of indecision, where should I play this out when normally somebody would just be safety first, you know, and boot it. Do you think that plays into this kind of indecision of being told to play a certain way, like play it out the back rather than the safety first, you know, if in doubt, give it a clout?
I think it's a bit of like, whether it's confidence, belief, it's probably a number of factors. But as you said, in that particular moment, it's like, even if he makes contact with the ball, he probably sort of bobbles away from it. No one scores. You've got time to react. But the fact that he's just, it ends up being a perfect through ball because he doesn't even make contact. But if you smash it back, because literally just before that, it was Louise, wasn't it? It smashed through their player on the touchline, deservedly got a yellow for it. He took one for the team, but Villa defended a free kick on the corner of their penalty area, got it out. And you thought at that point, right, we've probably weathered the storm here.
Yeah.
And then to kind of, you know, have a long ball go into the Tottenham half, you think, right, we should be all right. What with one clearance, yet again, how many times have we said that this season? It's just another infuriating moment on the list of avoidable goals. It's on the same list for me as throwing the game away at Arsenal.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure a more patient man than me could sit down and work out where we would be if we nullified these, like, I mean, and I'm talking about glaring, what you'd
really
class as schoolboy error mistakes, because we've shown that we can compete with any team. We just shoot ourselves in the foot. I mean, even against Leicester in the semi-final, we gave another, you know, glaring goal away, which normally if you're giving goals away in a semi-final, it's going to cost you. But we managed to even see that one out. I'm talking about the equaliser in the first leg.
Yep.
So we're good enough to win, but we can't give away, I mean, two in a game, giving away a penalty
We haven't been able to put 90 minutes together against a half-decent side all season. You know, we beat Newcastle. That game was won at half-time, in reality. Yeah. Some of the cup games we were very comfortable in, but
against nobody teams, though.
Like, yeah, yeah,
we're talking secondaries. And we were a second string as well.
The VAR
situation, Chris, what did you think about that? The penalty.
See, I actually disagreed with Smith's view after the game, because from where I sit, I'm behind the goal of the whole tent. As soon as the tackle's gone in, I've thought, that's a penalty.
Yeah.
Because you could just see the angle of where he's come from. He's come straight through the man. Has he got the ball? Well, yeah, eventually, but he's taken enough of the man that it's one of those decisions, unfortunately, that if the shoe's on the other foot, if that goes against Villa, you'd be raging if that wasn't given, unfortunately. He's unlucky. He's very unlucky. And I think in Smith's view, that, you know, is it clear and obvious? Well, it's not clear and obvious, but it's borderline enough that it is a penalty.
But this is an incident that VAR exists for, but it shouldn't take that it took so long. Surely, if they're going to call it up in his earpiece, that means they're pretty decided. They've seen it. They've seen something there. And they should probably play it once more and they should see it.
Well, you can have two quick looks from different angles. That's probably 30 seconds.
And it's... Or the referee goes over to the monitor, and you could probably do that in the same time it start. You know, it took them to fanny around.
Yeah, well, it means the refs can bottle the decisions. They don't have to make a decision now. It's like, well, I've got somebody upstairs looking out for me. I'll be fine.
But they need to speed up that process, because that is one of the big things. Because, you know, people say, oh, scrap VAR, and you suddenly get in a situation where you'll get dodgy decisions all the time, and there's no way around it, and there's going to be injustice after injustice. because people will see the reality on TV of whether a decision should be allowed or not, because they'll see, you know, infinite amount of replays very quickly after the incident. So I still don't understand where if you can watch a game on TV and see so many replays quickly and the decision is obvious to the viewer, you know, within, you know, we're talking 10 seconds, when it takes, we're talking minutes now for them to come to a conclusion. I mean, Phil, do you think that is key to VAR to actually have a place in the game?
Yeah, it is. I mean, what are they doing at Stockley Park? I mean, are they not watching the match? Are the screens all blank and all of a sudden it's like a siren goes off and it's like...
Can you imagine? They're playing poker or looking at Pornhub and then the siren goes off. Oh, shit, cards down, stub cigarettes out.
Yeah.
Quick swig of whiskey and then onto the remote to rewind it.
Let's pull straws.
Sorry, Phil.
No, but I mean, I don't know. Other than getting rid of Stockley Park and just having the referee go to the manager, or sorry, over to the monitor and
to
have a look
manager.
At it. Yeah, well.
Yeah,
what do you think, Dino? All right. Then.
Yeah. Or radically having, you know, a group of referees from a different country doing the VAR or something like that, just because you'll
get
the
potential for being lost in translation.
Oh, it couldn't be any worse. I mean, I just don't know how they've made such a mess of the implementation of VAR. I don't know how they fix it. I really don't. Because
I think strip it back, because I think it needs to be there for the fundamentals, but also I think it should be perhaps on the referee's discretion. Certainly this clear and obvious. I mean, if it's the 50-50 thing, then they shouldn't be beeping the ref. If, though, the ref wants a bit of clarification, then he can call for a video replay, I think, rather than like on a 50-50 kind of buzzing him saying, oh, no, let's look back, let's do VAR on this. That should be up to the ref's discretion. And then also just speed up the bloody process. Because, as I said, you know, when you're watching a live TV game and you've got those replays pretty instantly from different angles, you can pretty much tell on the majority. I mean, obviously you get some decisions that are a bit 50-50.
Yeah, imagine it was completely down to the referee the whole time. I mean, even a throw-in, you know, when the linesman leaves his flag in the middle saying, I don't know, ref, I didn't see it. The ref just goes, oh, give us 10 seconds. Yep, that way. Or the number of corners that Jack didn't get from deflecting shots off Spurs players. I mean, they were all obvious.
And this is the thing. If there is an obvious thing, that should be when VAR whispers in his ear. Like, if he gives a decision and it's 100% obvious, as in the clear and obvious, then they should buzz him. But if it's like 50-50 and they need more than like, you know, they need over a minute to look at it, then they shouldn't have been doing it. It's like, if it's not obvious, but it's wrong, then, you know, it's, you know, that's where the mistake is. But if it's super, super obvious, then they should be buzzing him and only buzzing him then.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those, I think a few people in the ground thought, oh, this is bullshit because of the delay, because that penalty was actually given a little while after the actual incident, and then obviously the process of determining it, that's when a frustration kind of grows.
Well, that's why the fans are singing it's not football anymore. It's just the frustration for everyone. If fans can see it on the, you know, on the screens, it's just the implementation in general and lack of communication.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is down to the Premier League and Mike Riley being arrogant and how they implemented it. They wanted to be the best in the world, and they had these ideas of changing the interpretation of laws, and they tried to be clever with it, and it's all backfired because, you know, for example, La Liga runs VAR, and it's not a big issue for supporters. You get the odd incident here and there, but it's not like this universal complaint that every fan is, you know, is, and it's in the press everywhere. It's barely an issue. So that shows
every weekend there's at least one big decision that's fucked up.
Yeah, in per game, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is the Premier League just not applying it. And also Mike Riley and his team thinking, you know, they're going to reinvent the wheel and do something clever. And it's all backfired. And as we've mentioned before, you know, he's on £250,000 to spearhead this. And it's beyond a joke now. But they actually, you know, initially in the first meetings with, you know, supporter reps in the Premier League, their stance was, well, you know, this is something that people have got to get adjust to, supporters have got to adjust to. And it was pretty patronising because they didn't think they were wrong in any shape or form. I mean, I remember even Purslow, let's say he really wanted to swear when he was talking about certain individuals and VAR. And, you know, he was the one accusing them of arrogance. guidance, which I think was shared by all clubs having to sit through their presentation and them literally just saying, well, you know, once you get used to it, it'll be all right.
Yeah, and it even affected the penalty save because, I mean, if you're a defender, you can't encroach. I mean, you shouldn't be encroaching anyway, but you're like another step behind. You're like another half second. So, you know, the ball just popped out perfectly for Son to tuck away up from Reina's save and, you know, he's always going to be first to it.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with penalties as well, I've always thought they can give an offside decision by like millimetres, yet they don't pull up goalkeepers for stepping a millimetre off their goal line or someone encroaching by a millimetre. You'd end up taking like years to take a penalty for someone stepping slightly over the lines. It's like, you know.
What about this on the handball? Is it intention? Is that the... How they decide it?
It's to do with its body shapes and silhouettes and stuff, isn't it?
What happens if Son handballed it to control that rebound and then put it away? And the ref said, oh, you can't do that. It's intentional handball. He said, no, it's not. My arm's broken. How can it be intentional?
Yeah, in theory, so actually it's not my arm because it's in two pieces. Which one?
I have no control of this arm, so how can it be intentional? It's broken. Anyway, that's a hypothetical point.
But it was just another little break that went against Philly. You know, Rainer had a good game, but he just couldn't get the breaks either. But you earned them, unfortunately.
And of course, Son will be out for the rest of the season. But he still managed to play and score two goals against Villa with the same broken arm that's going to keep him out for the rest of the season. That is the world of Villa, ladies and gentlemen.
It is
indeed. We know it all too well.
Even though Engels did score our first headed goal in the league this year.
Well, Samata scored one, though, against Bournemouth, did he not?
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, so he did.
First from a corner.
Yeah. We've broken the hoodoo. First goal from a... Or was it a first header from a set piece? It was some
stat. We're on a roll with the old headers. Right, any closing thoughts about, not only the game, but also our situation? I mean, the good news is we somehow have avoided the bottom three. I mean, is that potentially positive?
It staggers me. It shows how shit the bottom of the league is, really, and we're part of that club.
In terms of psychology, I think it's a big plus. But going up against the Saints now, a team that just steamrolled through us last time we played.
Well, we have to see it as an opportunity, man, because there's a lot of teams down at the bottom have got some pretty difficult games on the same game week. Relatively speaking, we've got what would be classed as one of the slightly easier on paper games. I think they'll have to go there and make a bit of a statement, especially with the week after, of course. While it's a nice distraction to have, having a cup final, the reality is, if we don't get a result this weekend, we're probably going to go in the bottom three anyway. Either way, we're probably going to end up in the bottom three of the week after and being a game behind because we've missed that Sheffield United game.
Phil, what do you think about the Southampton game? I mean, the good news is Mane doesn't play for Southampton because I remember going to Southampton and them absolutely destroying us under Sherwood. And
just
that
before a cup final as well.
Just before a cup final, exactly.
Wasn't it like a 5-minute hat-trick or something as well? It was ridiculous, wasn't it?
By the time it took me... Because I wasn't at the game, I was in Nottingham. And by the time it took me to order a drink at the bar, I think he'd scored a hat-trick.
And the strangest day, because didn't we lose 6-1 and somehow we still managed to retain our Premier League status that day as well? It was baffling.
It was kind of job done at that stage. We'd done the hard yards. But as Phil alludes to, it was before a cup final. And that to me, I thought that just fucked us mentally for that cup final. It didn't help.
No, I mean, I'd lie if I said I wasn't worried about Ings and Shane Long. I mean, they're just the two running into space is our sort of kryptonite. If they knock it past one of our centre backs and get round them, you know, either or them, I mean, we might need some sort of change. I mean, that's what Dean Smith's paid for, and I'm not. I mean, other people online will tell you the exact change that you need to make, but, you know, I can't think of it off the top of my head other than, you know, don't play a high line. That's as simple as I can think.
I think it's having mobility as well. I think the back three will change. I'm interested to see with Mings back who drops out because somebody ultimately will. And I wonder if it might be Konsa or Hawes and whether he will persevere with Engels knowing that, you know what, give me a response. Because actually earlier in the season, him and Mings did play reasonably well together.
As a two, I thought they were pretty good, yeah. They were firefighting because we're under so much pressure a lot of the times. But you take their performance against Spurs in the first 70-odd minutes and they were pretty immense.
Yeah, I think that the big one will be the midfield choices, you know, whether he goes with Drinkwater or Nakamba, or whether even someone like a Horahan comes in, who traditionally from the start doesn't always start the best, but yeah, it will be interesting to see how he lines it up.
Phil, what are you thinking when it comes to Danny Drinkwater?
You know, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Against Spurs, I put a comment in that it was, you know, 40% good, 60% bad, and I was still getting slated, but, you know, that's still shit. I wasn't saying he was man of the match. I was saying, like, that was the most decent touches I've seen him have. I mean, he looked punctured. I mean, you know, he was completely knackered, and the Spurs midfield would do that to anybody, but, you know, I thought again, you know, we did play better with him on the pitch, you know, territorially, we were further up the pitch, but yeah. I don't know if Horahan's the answer either, because as much as I like him, look at the stats with him on, he isn't the player to, shut down a game in the middle of the park. I mean, it's somebody we don't have. I mean, Nakamba's the terrier. Douglas Luiz, I actually enjoyed his performance at the weekend, but he's further up the pitch. He's not defensive midfielder at all.
What do you think about his miss?
I haven't missed many a chance like that myself over the years.
Happens to the best of you, Phil, doesn't it?
I thought he was really unlucky. I did. I mean, people will say, oh, he should have buried it, he should have done this. If you slow it, this, the advantage you have of, you know, I mean, I'll get slated for not being at Villa Park every single week, but the advantage you have of sitting at home and seeing TV, it slowed down so much. He was leaning back. He hit the ball with his left foot. It was missing the keeper. It was going in, and the defender's knee took it over the bar. I mean, it's those fine margins. You know, he did as well as he could. The only other thing he could have did was, you know, stop it with his left foot, let everybody fall over to that side, and then just pass it into the empty net. But, you know.
He's not on your level now, is he?
Wrong foot. No, but
what were your thoughts on Samatta's performance? Because I was actually encouraged again watching him. I thought he really put himself about well. I thought he was mobile, a very willing runner. And you could really see he's got a bit of heart and a bit of personality as a player, that he will put a shift in. If he has a quiet game, and it can be difficult leading the line on your own. I think he's one of those players, he really wants to get stuck in.
Yeah, you could tell even from his first game against Leicester in the cup, you think, yeah, he's all right, he knows what he's doing. And, you know, that we're talking about, he'd only been with the club for he had a week's training or whatever. But subsequently, I think he is a striker who gets into gets into positions that can hurt the opposition, and he reads the game pretty well from what I've seen so far.
I think he just wants to score goals. He wants to be in the penalty area, and that's one thing that the fans have sort of, fairly or not, criticised, you know, Wesley of being, you know, at least, you know, Abraham, he'd get in the 6-yard box, he'd be in the penalty area, he's on the end of things, you'd find Wesley out on the wing. And while, you know, Samatta's a willing runner, he will just get in the box, he wants to score strikers' goals, like the goal
is
at
that
one.
Wesley who costs the same amount as what Dortmund paid for Erling Haaland?
So,
what about the other new guy up front? Came on for 10 minutes cameo, you can't really say anything about him, but any impressions whatsoever?
Not Phil? Really.
Phil? No, other than he nearly made an absolute howler. It was nearly as bad as Engels, but Nakamba bailed him out. I think he's an interesting signing because, you know, you just saw with the trouble that United were having bringing in a forward, with the trouble that, you know, Chelsea had getting somebody in before they let Giroud go. I mean, there was nobody about in that transfer window.
Yeah,
I mean, I heard a story that John Terry gave Solomon Kalou a ring, but Villa couldn't get a work permit worked out for him. There was no way to bring him in. So, you know, we might say they were inactive, Villa, but there's all these things to look at. Whenever you're getting the work permit, they have to be in the top so many earners of the team and things. So it's not as easy as just, you know, clicking a button and buying that. One thing I will say about Samatta is if he only cost 10 million and we've been scouting him, why wasn't he the extra striker in August?
That's the strange thing.
That's the killer.
Because he surely would have come. I mean, I don't understand why he would say, oh, just give me another year in the Belgium League, boys, and I'll be on my way. It doesn't make that much sense unless, I mean, there was interest from other clubs, so maybe Ghent were like holding out, and then in the end nothing came through. And, they just thought, we'll wait until the next winter or, you know, the next summer.
Yeah, but you know, he looks, you know, very good signing, and hopefully he does the business.
I'd be interested to see him up front with Davis as a two, or, you know, further down the line as Wesley as a two. because I think actually regardless of where, whatever league we end up in next season, I would imagine those two forward players are still going to be at the club.
Yeah.
Be interesting to know what their contracts are and how many of those players have, you know, is it part of the, it's not part of the plan, obviously, but is it the contingency plan? It's like, right, you're coming into Villa. This is a, you know, a 5-year project, another one of those. We might go down, but we'll come straight back up because you're staying. You know, obviously yeah. not Jack, but other players.
There was some Villa website that wrote something about Baston. I mean, I just quickly skimmed it and basically saying, oh, we hope this isn't indicative of how he's going to be at Villa, and spending a whole, you know, lengthy article analysing this 10 minutes appearance and saying this reminded them of Codger coming on against Liverpool. And you're just thinking, it's his first game. he's hardly played. If the ball bounced off his arse and went in and that was his only touch, they'd be saying what an inspired signing he was by Smith and Suso. So you can't really judge any which way after just 10 minutes. And it's just a bit kind of negative to kick him already, get the agenda rolling on the scapegoat.
I mean, the reality is with him, he's not coming here to start. And I think once Keenan Davis is back fit, which it looks like he will before probably the cup final, he may or may not make the team at Southampton. He might not even get a spot on the bench. He is here to fill in the gaps and he'll know that, but he'll be getting paid reasonably well to do that. And he'll know that he has the opportunities that he may or may not get at Villa. And then he'll think, well, I've got the opportunity to potentially earn myself a contract for next season, whatever league Villa are in.
Yeah, and I think that's how his short-term contract is structured.
Same as Drinkwater, really. Drinkwater is playing for his future. He will know that. It's not, you know, he came in for criticism, obviously, on Sunday, and he did some things reasonably well and some things less so. But ultimately, if he hasn't got the legs at the moment, and I never really thought he was a rapid, mobile player anyway. He was always tidy, keep it ticking over kind of player. And one thing that still is just glaring about Villa is the sheer level that we miss McGinn.
Yeah, but you've got to remember people
he's
were
back
saying,
soon, and we'll be fine.
You've got to remember that people were saying, "Oh, he needs a rest. He's not the player he used to be. He needs a rest. He needs a rest. He needs a rest." So he's having a rest now.
he's had it forced upon him, and while he's been having his rest, he's been doing videos with the future king.
Yeah. Princey William.
Picking out his favourite Villa players and talking about mental health charities and such. So apparently he's back running in the swimming pool. He's been on the G-Force treadmill and stuff. So they expect to have him potentially out on the grass within the next week or two. I know Smith's already said there is a very outside chance that McGinn will want to feature in the cup final. I don't see it personally. I don't think Smith, for the greater good of the season, you wouldn't risk him.
No.
I mean, stranger things have happened, but I would highly doubt it. It wouldn't be worth the risk.
I think you're getting people's hopes up there.
Absolutely.
Subtle things we don't give a fuck about. What are you saying?
Storm Dennis?
Yeah, I was trying to put back my flight because of Storm Dennis, and there was nothing there when we flew into Heathrow, so I don't know what the fuss was about there.
Witton Station was shut because the Brookvale Road was flooding after the Tame burst its banks. Thoroughly unpleasant drive to Villa Park on that day.
Subtle things you don't give a fuck about, Phil?
Well, I've already mentioned Douglas Luiz's miss because I think that was harsh. I think another subtle thing I don't give a fuck about anymore is our fullbacks, because if one section of the team has gelled, it seems to be Target and Gilbert now, because especially Target and Jack, they've struck up a partnership out there on that side.
Yeah. Some of Target's statistics are actually some of the best in the league in terms of his balls into the box, and he's comparable with some of the best in the league.
They know each other from English youth level.
They came up together. They're a similar age, aren't they?
Yeah.
Another thing I don't give a fuck about, a retro Kappa kit. What all that was
quid.
About? At £90 a pop, I think.
I think that's Kappa's retro as opposed to anything to do with Villa.
Yeah,
really, isn't
well,
it?
Yeah. There's anyway, more merchandise I won't be buying.
Well, you don't buy merchandise anyway. So
no, I don't.
There you go. Right, anyway, let's get out of here. We have the trip to the Saints to look forward to, and the cup final as the next two games. Before that, expect to have the My Old Man Said podcast LA sessions, where we talk to a couple of villains who live in the City of Angels, as they call it. Anyway, let's get out of here. Do follow the podcast on Twitter and all the other places that you listen to it to make sure you are notified when new shows drop, because we don't normally have a regular date, although we'll be a bit more regular now. So it's good to have notifications so you know when it appears. Also, treat yourself to a My Old Man Said mug to help support the show, and so you can have a beverage while you listen to it. There's also t-shirts. I might sneak out an extra t-shirt just to have fun at Manchester City at Wembley. That those hopefully will be out this week, so there's time for you to obviously get them delivered for the big day. Right, until next time, stay decent, and it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.